Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. You can find him on Twitter at Ink Research. Ted, welcome back to the show.
Jim, it's great to be back, and thanks to everyone tuning in.
Ted, why is value investing winning?
Well, it's been a tug of war all year between, value investing meaning stocks that generally have cheap PE ratios and other valuation metrics compared to the broader market versus the growth stocks that everyone came to love and hear about for last decade, the Zoom communications well after the pandemic, but, the Facebooks and the Googles, Alphabets, those were all in vogue for the past decade and didn't really matter what you paid for them. They just kept going up. But now value investing has started to, I think, dominate, and we've seen that particularly since Jerome Powell gave a speech at Jackson Hole at the end of August. Jackson Hole is the annual end of summer central bank get together where they talk about monetary policy. And it wasn't any surprise to us that he said, look, we're not cutting interest rates. We're like going to raise them. But you've got a large group, mostly I would say old men in the market, mm-hmm. who are wedded to this notion that interest rates are going to keep going down forever, and that, oh yeah, these bond rates went up, but that was just a blip, and we're going back down to 1% 30-year bond yields. Well, you never say never, but I'm sorry, that's just not the world we live in right now. And Jerome Powell had to kind of drill that into everyone's head back in August, and some people still didn't get it. So then we had the FOMC Federal Reserve meeting on Wednesday, where Jerome Powell had a press release, and he said, we are not going to raise rates, and in fact, if we have to generate 1-2 million people unemployed, if they have to lose their jobs, that's the price we have to pay to get inflation going down. Right? We're keeping rates high, and they're going to stay high. Right? So, finally, the message is starting to sink in for people who are paid a lot of money to manage other people's money, who have been in complete and total denial all year about the direction of interest rates. Okay, so now, why does that impact value investing? Well, because all these growth stocks, all these big stocks that you see in the S&P 500 that dominate the S&P 500 in terms of market cap, most of them have very high multiples, which means that you're paying a lot of money for the future cash flows way down the road. That was all right last decade when interest rates were falling and falling and falling. But it's not okay now because those cash flows are just not worth as much because you have competition now with the government debt market where interest rates are going up and up and up. So that means that value investing is back, and it means that, those companies that have lower valuations that are generating cash flow and have sustainable business models, so that's really important, the sustainable business model part of the equation, should do better in this environment. So it's a very big sea change from what we saw over the past decade. Value investing is back. It's a very difficult type of investing because you have to sort out the value traps. Those are stocks trading with low multiples, well, because there's a good chance they're going to go bankrupt, versus those that the growth crowd, the old man crowd, you know, who just want to buy bonds, who've been ignoring for the past decade, that crowd now have to recalibrate, and they will panic into some of these stocks eventually. But it takes time for them to figure out what to buy, because you know, it's easy to buy Google. It's one of the biggest Alphabet. It's one of the biggest stocks in the index. It's easy to buy Apple, right? Everyone knows it. It's a lot harder to find mid-cap and small-cap value stocks that aren't going bankrupt, that are trading cheap because they've been ignored. That's a really, really hard job. But, you know, I mean, that's what we tried to do at Inc. We tried to use insider signals to validate those value stocks, because if you've got insiders that are buying and holding cheap stocks, that's good. If you have insiders that are selling cheap stocks, that's bad. And you know, when you boil it down, that's, you know, basically as simple as it gets, right? You're looking for insiders that are showing commitment to low price stocks because they believe in the future, and you want to avoid those low price stocks where you don't really see a lot of insider commitment into those stocks or even selling. So that's the new investing environment. It's a tough environment. Those are the cards that we've been dealt, and those are the ones that I think we're certainly looking to play here over the next few years.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, the Japanese government is now throwing support behind the yen. The first time that's happened since 1998, well, I recall back in the 90s, there was the Asian currency crisis. Are Asian currencies in crisis again?
Well, central planning is in crisis, okay? And this is central planning monetary policy gone off the rails. It's gone off the rails, obviously, in the G7, right? Like, the central banks have botched it all up. There's no other way to paint it. Okay, they missed the transitory inflation thing, and in U.S., Canada, Europe, Japan, a bit different. Their inflation's a little lower, but they're on this kind of insane yield curve control policy, which is making their currency weak. Okay, so this is another reason, Jim, why value investing is back, because now the Bank of Japan has no easy choices, which means investors have no easy choices, because the only thing the Japanese authorities can do is bad for either the bondholders of Japanese government bonds or bondholders of U.S. treasuries. So guess which is the first they've picked? Well, the option that makes it bad for bondholders of U.S. treasuries, and that is they've been selling U.S. dollars and buying yen to try and prop up their currency. Well, how do they get their U.S. dollars? They sell all those treasuries they have sitting at the Fed, not all of them, but a good chunk of them. And today, we saw 10-year treasury yields shoot up even higher. This is, of course, despite I've been hearing all year that how apparently treasury yields are going to go lower and lower and lower, but apparently, you know, they've been going higher and higher and higher. Okay, so this is because if the Japanese government is going to try and prop up its currency, it has to sell U.S. treasuries. Again, that puts up interest rate pressure. That, again, makes value investing more relevant in this current environment. So there's no easy outcomes or environment pictures here for investors. Okay, we've got the Bank of we've got the Japanese authorities having to make some tough decisions. We have the, as I mentioned earlier, Jerome Powell said, "Oh yeah, well, we may have a million. We may need to increase unemployment by a million." Can you imagine that? Like, what that this is an acceptable type of outcome from a group of professionals that are supposed to be centrally planning the economy down, straight down the fairway, and now they're saying, "Oh yeah, well, if if you lose your job, just deal with it. That's your problem. We have to get inflation under control. Finish the sentence, Jerome, because we screwed up so badly last year. Right? He doesn't finish that part of the sentence. Well, I will finish it for him. Right? But, you know, if Canadians and voters in the G7 think this is fine, that this is the type of system of monetary and financial management they want, then that's fine. This is what we're getting. Okay. And in Canada, we've had mismanagement, I would argue, of the monetary policy now for a decade, where you had the central bank leaving interest rates far too low for too long, and it didn't just start with the current Bank of Canada governor. This has been going on now, you know, I would say at least since David Dodge. And, you know, now we're paying the price. You know, home ownership in Canada, you know, is dropping, you know, over the last decade. And this is because it's become so, the affordability has deteriorated so much. Thank you, Bank of Canada. They have to take some of the responsibility for that. But what do we have? We have the Canadian media who are defending the status quo, right? So, you know, there is a large amount of defensiveness now amongst institutions in Canada because things have gone so, off the main trajectory that they were expecting, I'll put it nicely. So, you know, we're in for very difficult times, difficult choices. So it's a very difficult period, and it's a very difficult period for investors, and that's why you know we really think you need to have as many good signals that you can understand that are intuitive when you're looking at opportunities, because I believe there are opportunities. There are lots of good opportunities in the Canadian market there, and in fact they're broader, I believe, now than they were a year ago, where it was concentrated heavily in oil and gas. Now it is spread out to EVs and to other, you know, industrial policy oriented type stocks. But, you know, again, it's stock by stock, and there will be no tide that lifts all boats. So we're being very razor focused at Inc. in terms of looking at company by company, and one just has to be very, very tough when it comes to assessing management, their behavior, their financings. There's no room for second-rate management teams in your portfolio, right? There just isn't, not in this environment, because there's no one has your back, unfortunately, right? So we rely on our signals. We rely on, you know, what we can see that the data tells us. And at the end of the day, you need diversification, because even your best signals are going to fail you from time to time. There's no infallible signal out there, but there is opportunity. It's just really hard to capture it, but it's there. And from that perspective, the Canadian market hasn't had this kind of advantage over the rest of the G7 markets in a long time. So, you know, it is a great time to be a value-oriented investor in Canadian stocks. It's just, it's going to take a lot of work to realize on those opportunities.
During good times, all the financial newsletter publishers I talk to from around the world have complained. Nobody wants to sign up for a newsletter because, well, hell, like you said, just put your money in the fangs and up it goes. Now, in troubled times, people still aren't signing up because they were so successful when markets were going up. They still see no need for outside input in making their investment decisions. They all think they're brilliant. Well, take a look at those Robinhooders right now. Most of them are losing money, by huge amounts, because they're still buying the same meme stocks that worked for them so well 2 years ago. Is that something you found, that people are still hesitant to get informed advice?
Right. I mean, people, look, it's happening not just at the retail end, but also in the institutional end. I mean, this is kind of human nature to be anchored in the past decade, to be anchored in your past successes. And I think the message from Jerome Powell on Wednesday was that it's higher for longer interest rates. That means higher for longer value investing. That means higher for longer having to do your homework. So, you know, I think investors should have a not just a diversified portfolio of stocks, but also a diversified set of research tools to assist them, and you know, or to you know, to hold their investment advisors to account, because you know you have to be active one way or the other in your managing your investments. Either if you're doing it yourself, you have to have the tools and the skill and the knowledge to do it, or if you've given it over to a professional advisor, you have to be able to you know assess your portfolio returns to make sure that you're getting good value for money from the investment advisor. So, you know, you know, the more active one can be in either overseeing, you know, or researching the, you know, their portfolio, you know, it just helps with the odds. So, we're definitely not in any environment where you just, I think, where you just buy the S&P 500 ETF, close your eyes, and boom, 10 years from now, you're going to be, you're going to look, oh, good, that was a 7-year compounded return average. You know what may happen? And I'm not predicting this. You could go back to your 10 years from now, in 2032, you may open up your account, look at your S&P 500, and it may be at exactly the same level as it is today. Now, it may have gone up and down 50%, you know, from top to bottom within that period. But there's a good chance it's just going to go sideways for a decade, right? Not predicting that, but that's a scenario, right? Where if you've got this kind of high interest rate environment, where you've got so many investors that are anchored to the past, that are still buying stocks, trading at, you know, 50 PEs and expecting to get, you know, a 50% return over the next 10 years, you know, that's going to take a while for people to readjust, you know, to adjust to the reality of the new value-oriented environment that we're in. So, yeah, you know, the sooner one starts doing their homework, and you know, the sooner you'll have the potential to realize a return on those investments and those subscriptions. That you know, some of them cost money, but look, you know, like Canadian Insider is $500 a year for a Canadian Insider Ultra Club. You know, is that a lot of money? Well, it is. It's not cheap, but in the grand scheme of things, depending on the size of your portfolio, you know, I would suggest that it's probably well within the realm of what's reasonable. So, and there are other services out there as well. Everybody has their different needs, and getting some good tools to help with improve your odds at this game, where the trick is to find those value stocks, those beaten down stocks that are profitable, that are likely going to generate cash flow, that the FANG crowd has yet to discover and probably will discover them maybe 5 years from now. So that's that's kind of how we're looking at things. It's an exciting time, but it's a tough time. We spend a lot of time at Inc. doing our morning reports and looking at, you know, opportunities and trying to assess, what might fit in today's environment. So it's an exciting time, but there's lots of challenges, but we like to think our signals are up for it.
Now, the UK has ended its fracking ban in England. I guess having Russia cut off natural gas supplies due to, quote, maintenance, or for political reasons, whatever, we know it's not a reliable source. Are more places that are against fracking going to say, hey, it's a good idea perhaps if we have our own natural gas supplies?
You know, I have no idea. I saw, you know, there's still this very self-serving environmental extremist lobby out there saying, no, now's the time to double down on renewables and so-called reliable renewables. Okay, what does that mean? What do you mean? Like, okay, so we're not talking wind, or we're talking about solar. Okay, so because wind is not reliable. I mean, it can be a source. It can be part of an energy mix, for sure. I'm not against wind power, but reliable? No, it's not reliable. Solar? Well, I guess if you're in Saudi Arabia, it's pretty reliable. If you're in Prince Rupert? Is it reliable? I don't think so. Right? So, but these self-serving propaganda positions from these environmental extremist organizations, they're part of the problem. And yet we see it over and over again that they're doubling down and hoping that people will believe this, even as people are, you know, struggling to pay their bills. And now you've got this massive I don't want to call it irresponsible. I mean, again, there's no good options now after these big mistakes in Europe and UK, you know, with these subsidies, right? So, yes, I think it's, you know, fine. They're going to let fracking, fine. You can now go crazy. Go convince, oil service companies to set up shop in your country and, you know, that you're not going to come and ban them in 3 years when all of a sudden, you know, all the price of natural gas comes down because you've had some success. Oh, okay. Well, now we don't need these fossil fuel companies anymore. And we should tax them double, by the way, like that guy who is the Secretary General of the United Nations who was out, you know, spitting out a bunch of more disastrous policy prescriptions from the pulpit of the United Nations, saying, you know, that wanting to tax fossil fuel producers. Well, you know, that worked out really well leading up to the Russian crisis. So, yeah, double down on that. You go for it. But just don't go for it in my country, please. Okay, you can go inflict your poverty prescriptions on other countries that are gullible enough to listen to you. Okay? And unfortunately, there have been countries that, such as Sri Lanka, that swallowed that propaganda and paid a heavy price. But it's just remarkable that you still have somebody up there on a world stage spouting out the same failed policies. But it's there. And, you know, that is the world we live in. And it's, you know, we're just, you know, unfortunately, there's so many vested interests. There's so much money at stake. And, you know, the thing that we have to guard against in Canada is not allowing those kinds of those wrong-headed policies to destroy our way of life and destroy our markets. We have to be very, very vigilant against having that kind of creeping hopiism come into the public policy mix, because that would just be a disaster. You know, we would just lose what advantage we have. So I know there are forces in Canada that are pushing hard to destroy our fossil fuel industry, but that would be very irresponsible, and it would be you know, again, you know, you've got some countries now finally realizing this is a bad idea. The problem is, though, once bitten, twice shy, is the fossil fuel industry, is the responsible Western oil service companies that know all about carbon capture, that know all about how to reduce emissions, are they going to go into England and invest millions and millions of dollars when you've got the Secretary General of the United Nations calling them evil and telling them that they should be taxed basically to death, right? Like, that's fine that you've got Liz Truss as the Prime Minister of the UK right now, but what if you get some fanatical Labour politician who takes over from her, right? So this is, once you've hurt your investment base with bad policies, you know, it's hard to unwind that feeling, and it takes a lot of trust building, and that takes time. But if you believe the challenges facing the climate, we don't have a lot of time. So, you know, these comments from the Secretary General of the United Nations and other people like that are very dangerous to my kids, and I think they're very dangerous to humanity, because they are just doubling down on bad policies that have gotten us into this mess to begin with. We need, obviously, a balanced approach. And, you know, we have companies and industry in North America that are on track to carbon capture, that have their eye on the ball on net zero. Why are you vilifying these people? There's something more going on. That's all that leads either the Secretary General of the United Nations is an idiot, or there's something else going on, okay? And I suspect that there's something else going on, because I don't think you become Secretary General of the United Nations when you're dumb. I think you probably, You know, you're probably a pretty sharp cookie politically. So, we have to be very mindful as citizens. And, that's going to make the political environment, unfortunately, probably very polarized. Because as soon as you say, the fossil fuel industry, they can actually be part of the solution. You have a whole group of vested environmental extremists coming after you as, trying to accuse you of being, destructive for the environment when it's just the opposite, right? So the moral high ground, they always try and seize the moral high ground, but their track record speaks for itself. The environmental movement is primarily, if not, solely responsible for the mess we have right now. That's unfolding in Europe, okay? So it's up for them. It's up to them to come and come clean and to account for their policy mistakes and to provide a compelling reason why should we be doubling down on policies that have failed so miserably and have inflicted so much pain economically and, it's going to be suffering, I think this winter for a lot of people. So, in some parts of the world. So, we're living in very tricky political times. But, fortunately in Canada right now, we've got some good cards that have been dealt our way on the industrial policy side, on the electric vehicle side, on what we call clean energy 2.0. So we can make a difference in Canada. We can provide part of the solution, right? So that's what we're focused on, and we try and put aside all these distractions from the left, the extreme left and the environmental extreme movement, who would have us go back to where we were in pre-pandemic, where we'd find ourselves vulnerable to not having the energy that we need to fuel our economies and to feed our people. So let's hope that sanity prevails. It's great that Liz Truss has moved in that direction. Again, though, there's been so much damage done in the past. It's going to take a long time. And so the best thing we can do, Jim, in Canada, is to be watchful and to make sure we do not allow that kind of environmental extremism to seep into our body politics and to just say no to that and just say, no, we're going to take a balanced approach and we're going to focus on getting to net zero via technology and whatever policy mix is needed to get there. That includes using the resources that we have in the ground right now for the benefit of all Canadians, our children, our taxes. We need to get those resources out responsibly. That will pay for a lot of dental care and will pay for a lot of social programs and a lot of hospitals. Okay, and if we do it right, we can show the world how we can get to net zero by having the right policy mix, not the wrong policy mix, which, there's so many people out there trying to promote.
Those people who glue themselves to the highway and block traffic for hours thinking they're doing marvels for the environment. A, you have all these idling vehicles cranking out extra pollution, but they also block the electric cars like Tesla's. And I don't have any stats, but I would say Vancouver is one of the Tesla capitals of the world. It seems like every 10th or 20th car in Vancouver now is a Tesla or another kind of electric vehicle. Of course, we also have Lamborghini with new driver stickers on them as well. Or are they Lamborghini?
Well, it'll be interesting. Just wait until there's an EV vehicle, an EV version of the Lamborghini. You think the current ones go fast off of the line? I can't imagine how quickly they'll be bolting off of the intersection green lights when they get the EV models. But and look, BC right now we're lucky, right? We've got a lot of hydropower. Will it be enough down the road to juice all these EVs? I hope so. But let's keep our eye on that too. How are we going to make sure that we have enough electrical supply so that we can really be a world leader in EV adoption? I'd love to see that, there's lots of if we look at this positively, there's so much we can do. You just have to put out all the negativity of all these environmental extremists. We need a balanced approach, and we have to shun these one-liners about we have to We have to, we have to get rid of fossil fuels and double down on clean energy, you know, solar and wind. Well, dig a little deeper and explain how it's all going to work, and then I'm all ears. But until then, you know, let's carry on with sensible policies that have a really good mix of new energy technologies and carbon capture focused fossil fuel technologies and resources, and Canada can really emerge from this as a powerhouse economy. I really believe that, but we have to make sure we're getting it right.
And I just did a quick Google search. BC has highest number of EV sales per capita in North America. And why are electric vehicles so popular in BC? BC tops Quebec and California as EV capital of North America. Maybe, though, because they're so expensive, it's because we have so many rich people. Like I said, the same people who give their 16-year-old sons Lamborghinis.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So, but this is the one of, you know, getting back to the investing side, and I recognize what the Biden administration is doing, whether they're doing it the right way or not. That's a debate. People can have that, but they are trying to make electric vehicles more affordable to the middle class. I think they've got a ways to go before it's affordable for everyone, but you have to start somewhere. And so I think governments are starting to realize they have to make them more affordable, not just to the super rich, which is the early adopters. And I think there's probably some truth to what you've said there, Jim, in terms of, you know, the affluent in BC are probably the early adopters on EV. But I believe in China, you know, they're trying to get down, you know, across the board in terms of adoption. You know, we're going to have to work toward, we will work towards that here. And that's why, you know, look, there's been a lot of depression in the market, a lot of things going down, but you know what's not going down is the price of lithium, right? Like the price of lithium in China was, I believe it's hitting multi-year highs, even like last night on Wednesday, you know, the day the Fed rocking markets and rocking all those capital markets with interest rate increases, lithium prices have continued to skyrocket in China. So if it's going up in China, it's going to be going up here. So, you know, again, we're in the right place at the right time in Canada, and you know, we are seeing pockets of growth, pockets of strength, and you know, the battery metals is one of them. Battery metal mining is one of them. So it's for sure, you know, something we're quite excited about at Inc. and something we're watching quite closely in terms of what electric vehicle mining companies pop up on our screens.
Yes. Now, the same people who like to glue themselves to highways are also against mining. Where do they think all the materials for these electric cars and their batteries are going to come from if they don't come out of the ground or maybe deep ocean mining?
Well, that's the other, you know, one of the key trends that we are looking at is whether deep ocean mining is going to disrupt the whole mining industry. It has the potential. I wouldn't predict it yet. It has the potential. There still has to be demonstrated technologically. And it still has to be demonstrated economically that it can be done. But of course, you do have the usual suspects saying, no, 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 no. You know, we can't upset the seabed. Okay. So can we rip up ripping up the environment in Indonesia to pull nickel out of the ground? Is that okay? Like, you know, and so it basically, it's an industry, Jim, of people who get paid to run around and basically say no, right? And you do have to wonder at some point whether there's economic interest funding some of these organizations to just, you know, try and build up local opposition to certain mines, because, you know, at the end of the day, there are commercial interests that don't want competition. And, you know, we have to have our eyes wide open to that possibility and really hold these environmental extremists to account.
Yes, like I said, and you have said, you know, green energy is terrific. What's your transition policy to make sure that we aren't paying, as we did in Vancouver, $2.67 a liter for gasoline? That translates into $10.14 a gallon U.S., $10.68 Canadian gallon. Yeah, that's pricey
right.
energy, all right.
Yes, well, of course, some of these groups love that, right? They think that's a great idea, but they unfortunately have not provided alternatives, right? So that's fine. If I would not mind if the price of gas is $3 a liter, if there's, you know, cheap EVs for everyone, and you know, we're able to plug in our car below that, you know, at 40% of that price. Right, but that's not available. So you know, so don't come to us with these, oh no, you have to stop fossil fuels if you do not have an alternative, and just, oh yeah, this hopium that, oh yeah, well we'll just adopt solar and wind. How? What's the plan? Where's the money coming from? Right? Where is Liz Truss getting her money to subsidize all these electrical bills she's planning to do. She's planning to subsidize the power bills in the UK. Well, she's getting it from the bond market. That's putting up the price of money, putting up interest rates. Again, it comes back to why value investing, I think, is going to stay in vogue. So if you're not going to have a smooth transition from fossil fuels to EV, then you've got to go on this massive borrowing binge tomorrow, which is going to throw up interest rates, which is going to play havoc in the global economy. You know, so it's completely irresponsible for all these groups and all these leaders, such as the Secretary General of the United Nations, to spout out like that and not be honest with people about what the costs are. Right? So that's, you know, it's just something we have to deal with. But, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. We have to, just say no to these people and say, you know, go get off the road and put your plan together and come back to us with something that makes sense. But get off the road. You're just making things worse.
Yeah, and these people don't recognize, depending on which stats you look at, Canada is either the coldest country on the planet or the second coldest. And all these protesters from Vancouver Island and the lower mainland of Vancouver, you're lucky to live in a moderate climate where the average winter temperature is 10 Celsius and summer it's 20 to 22 degrees Celsius. The rest of Canada, it's a lot more extreme. You either need air conditioning or a really good furnace.
Well, that's right. And the other... The other element that the extremists won't tell you is that if we shut down our fossil fuel industry, you're giving market share over to Russia. Okay, well, how are they doing on their carbon capture plans? Never mind this whole Russia-Ukraine war, right? Let's talk about the implications of saying, oh, no, we're not going to do any more fossil fuel. Okay, we can stop our consumption of fossil fuel tomorrow. If we want, that's fine. I mean, it's going to, you know, I'm not recommending that. I mean, it's going to cause all sorts of problems. But if we want to inflict damage on our own society and people vote for that and they're happy with that, well, God bless Canada. But I don't hope that's not going to happen. But it doesn't mean the people in Africa are going to accept that insanity, right? So they're going to keep driving their gasoline cars and vehicles. Well, who's going to provide that? Well, I can guess it'll be Chinese refineries, you know, fed by Russian oil, right? And well, how is Russia's emissions control standards going? Like, I'd like the Secretary General of the United Nations to provide me with a rundown of that before he spouts off and starts attacking our industry, right? So, you know, these guys are very dangerous. These are very dangerous people. Because they're being disingenuous and they're not being honest, okay? And they've got to get honest with things and they have to be more rigorous, and we cannot accept any of this propaganda from them. We need to say, no, give us the facts, okay? You want to shut down our fossil fuel industry? How are you going to replace it, and how much is it going to cost, and who is going to provide the transition? And if anybody is not giving those ingredients to their policy prescription, they are being disingenuous or they're being dishonest, okay? So we have to be mindful. We have to be watchful for all these people and all these extremists, and we just have to say, no, that's not on. And we also have to, watch out in Canada here, because I'm afraid we're going to have some of this coming down the pipe, and we just have to be on top of this, ready for it when it happens.
Ted, great discussion and great advice.
Well, we don't provide investment advice, but hopefully at least advice
research.
On what to look for and what to watch for in our society as we move forward here in dealing with these very important problems with climate change and how we're going to deal with the mess that's been left after a decade of central planning on the monetary side in the G7, and now all these chickens are coming home to roost. So value investing is I think a good place to start, and we'll see how things evolve in the months ahead, Jim.
Ted, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me back.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca. His website, CanadianInsider.com. Find him on Twitter at InkResearch. If you have any questions for Ted or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.